Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we get straight to the heart of complex issues. You're here because you want to understand the crucial details without the fluff, and today we're tackling a legal case that throws a stark light on how the law defines and recognizes relationships. Thomas v. Sullivan.
Exactly. And for anyone delving into constitutional law, especially, you know, the Fifth Amendment's equal protection component, this case is a powerful example. It shows the tension that can arise between legal rules and, well, individual lives.
Yeah, it really makes you think about what fairness means, especially when government benefits are involved. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's unpack the core of it. We're talking about Gertrude Thomas. She spent, 47 years with Joseph Thomas?
47 years, yeah. And they had 10 children together.
Wow. So it feels intuitive, right? After such a long, significant relationship, you'd think she'd be entitled to Social Security widow's benefits when Joseph passed away. Mm-hmm. But the legal reality was quite different.
That's right. The big complication was Joseph's earlier ceremonial marriage. He married a woman named Janie way back in 1918. Gertrude and Joseph only started living together much later, around 1938. So when Joseph died, Gertrude applied for widow's benefits. She actually claimed they had a ceremonial marriage themselves back in 1943.
But here's where it gets really complicated, right? Years later, I think it was 1985.
Yeah, 1985, Janie reappeared.
And she claimed she was still legally married to Joseph because they'd never actually divorced.
Exactly. And incredibly, the Social Security Administration, the SSA, they looked into it. They couldn't find any record of a divorce between Joseph and Janie.
And crucially, no record of a marriage between Joseph and Gertrude either.
No official record, no marriage license for Gertrude and Joseph. That was the absolute sticking point. Because Gertrude couldn't produce that paper, either her marriage license or a divorce decree for Joseph and Janie, the SSA had to conclude Janie was the legal widow.
And so Gertrude's claim was denied.
Denied, despite the 47 years, despite the 10 children.
So what just jumps out immediately is this decades-long relationship, this family built over nearly half a century, essentially being, well, invalidated for benefit purposes.
Which leads us straight to the central legal question. Does the Social Security Act's way of distinguishing between invalid ceremonial marriages and invalid common law marriages violate the Fifth Amendment's guarantee of equal protection?
That's the constitutional challenge Gertrude brought. Why should the type of invalid marriage matter so much?
Right. So to understand the Supreme Court's decision, we need to talk about rational basis review.
Exactly. That's the standard the court uses for most equal protection claims like this one.
Okay, so for someone maybe still, you know, wrapping their head around these review standards, what exactly is the rational basis test here?
Think of it as the lowest hurdle for the government to clear in these kinds of cases. The court essentially asks just two things. First, is there a legitimate government interest the law is trying to serve?
Okay, legitimate interest.
And second, is there any rational relationship, even if it's not perfect, between the way the law distinguishes between groups and that legitimate interest?
And the burden's on the challenger, right? Gertrude, in this case.
Right. She had to show there was no rational basis for the distinction. It's a tough burden.
So, in Thomas v. Sullivan, what were the government's stated legitimate interests?
They argued two main things: preventing fraud in the Social Security system and administrative efficiency, making the system workable.
That makes intuitive sense. You can see why the government wants safeguards against, you know, falsely claiming marriage to get benefits after someone dies.
Sure.
So how did the court connect that interest to this specific distinction between invalid ceremonial and invalid common law marriages? How did they find it rational?
Well, the court bought the government's argument. The reasoning really hinged on the idea of a paper trail.
The document.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Ceremonial marriages, even if invalid for some reason, usually involve some kind of formal process,
yeah,
a license application, maybe witnesses. The court felt this documentation offered a degree of security against fraud that happens after death.
Okay.
The majority opinion literally said something like, a ceremonial marriage requires documentary proof that cannot be faked after death.
That logic is clear, yeah. Harder to fake papers retroactively.
But then you look at Gertrude's situation, 47 years, 10 kids. Isn't that its own kind of powerful evidence? Why wouldn't that carry legal weight?
That's the human side of it, the part that feels compelling. And, you know, Judge Van Groffelen touched on this in his concurrence, which we should get to.
Mm-hmm.
But under rational basis review, the majority wasn't swayed by longevity alone. They stayed focused on the type of attempted marriage. They basically reasoned that common law marriages, which depend more on things like living together and telling people you're married,
without the initial ceremonia paperwork.
Right. They saw those as presenting a greater possibility of false claims, precisely because they lacked that upfront formal documentation.
So to put it plainly, the court basically said, even with this incredibly long life together, because Gertrude and Joseph didn't have the formal paperwork of a ceremony attempt, the government was justified in treating her claim differently due to a higher perceived risk of fraud. That's pretty much it. The court gave a lot of deference to the government's judgment. They acknowledged the law might seem harsh in some cases, might not be perfectly fair.
But under rational basis, that's not the test.
No, the test is just, is there some minimally rational link between the rule and the goal? And here, they found one in fraud prevention and the reliance on documentation.
This really brings us to the human cost, doesn't it? That concurring opinion from Judge Van Graffieland, it really hits hard. He called it unconscionable.
Yeah, unconscionable. That this 74-year-old widow who lived with Joseph Thomas for 47 years and bore 10 of his children is now to be branded an adulteress. Powerful words.
But then he follows it up with, essentially, our hands are tied.
Precisely. He says, however, we must apply the law as Congress wrote it, not as we would like to have had it written. That captures the dilemma perfectly.
He clearly felt the injustice for Gertrude.
Deeply, it seems. But he recognized the court's role, especially under this very differential rational basis standard, is limited. Courts generally won't just strike down laws because they seem unfair if there's some rational legislative reason behind them.
So even though it feels wrong in Gertrude's specific case, the court's position was essentially, look, Congress made this rule. There's a somewhat logical reason for it related to administration and fraud, so we can't overturn it based on this individual hardship.
That's the core legal reasoning, yes. They viewed it as a policy choice for Congress. If society decides long-term undocumented relationships deserve recognition for benefits, Congress needs to change the law. The court saw its job as assessing the existing law's constitutionality under that minimal rationality test.
Okay. So for you, maybe listening as a law student trying to really cement these concepts, what are the main takeaways from this deep dive? What principles does Thomas v. Sullivan really drive home?
Well, first and foremost, it's a stark illustration of how incredibly deferential rational basis review is. If the government can articulate any legitimate purpose, and the law isn't completely irrational in relation to that purpose, it's likely to survive.
Even if the fit isn't perfect.
Right. Second, the government doesn't even need to have had that specific reason in mind when they passed the law. The court can uphold it based on any conceivable legitimate basis.
Okay.
And third, it shows just how significant administrative practicality, like preventing fraud, keeping the system running smoothly, can be as a legitimate government interest. It can outweigh individual hardship under this level of scrutiny.
And specifically thinking about the Social Security Act and marriage, what's the key distinction we need to remember from this case?
The crucial line the SSA drew, which the court upheld, is between an invalid ceremonial marriage and an invalid common law marriage.
Explain that again briefly.
Sure. An invalid ceremonial marriage is where the couple tried to have a formal wedding, but something went wrong legally. Maybe a prior marriage wasn't dissolved, like here. An invalid common law marriage is where they never went through a ceremony or didn't meet all the state's specific requirements for common law marriage. The SSA, and the court agreed, prioritizes the potential paper trail from even a flawed ceremony attempt as a bulwark against fraud.
Got it. And it's also worth a quick note, especially for those really digging into con law, about the Fifth versus the 14th Amendment, right?
Yes, that's a good nuance. The Fifth Amendment's equal protection component applies to the federal government, like the SSA here. The 14th applies to the states. But the core principle is similar, treating similar people similarly. The historical context and specific legal tests can sometimes differ slightly. It's something to keep an eye on.
Ultimately, Thomas v. Sullivan just hammers home this sometimes uncomfortable truth. There can be a big gap between what feels morally right or what someone seems to deserve based on their life and what the law actually requires for entitlement to government benefits.
Absolutely. Gertrude's long commitment, her family, that human reality didn't meet the specific legal requirements laid out in the statute as interpreted by the SSA and the court.
And this leads to some common misunderstandings, doesn't it?
Definitely. A big one is just assuming that being together a long time automatically equals a legal marriage for all purposes, especially federal benefits. This case clearly shows that's not true.
Right. Another misconception might be thinking that if a law seems unfair, the courts, especially under a rational basis, can just step in and rewrite it or fix it.
Yeah, their power under that standard is really quite limited. They're not meant to be substituting their policy judgment for the legislature's, as long as the legislature's choice wasn't totally irrational.
And finally, it's easy to think constitutional rights always win out over bureaucratic concerns.
But this case shows that's not always so. Rational basis review explicitly allows the government's interest in efficiency and fraud prevention to be weighed and often to prevail.
This has been really insightful digging into Thomas v. Sullivan. It's, like you said, a case that sticks with you because of that human story. It forces you to grapple with the sometimes rigid lines the law draws.
It really does. It's fundamental for understanding equal protection, rational basis, and how federal benefits law intersects with complex family situations.
So as you continue thinking about these issues, here's something to mull over. In this world of government benefits, where should that line be? How do we balance the need for clear, fraud-resistant rules with the desire for equitable outcomes for people in long-standing, genuine relationships that just lack the perfect paperwork? Thomas v. Sullivan doesn't give an easy answer, but it sure makes you ask the question. Thanks for diving deep with us.